Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Here we are then, episode 2 of the brand new series of Parkcast. If you're new here, welcome. I'm Bex. This is Kev.
Hello.
And we are your hosts here on this podcast for theme park fans. If that's you, welcome. You are in the right place. If you're not even quite sure if you're a theme park fan or not, you just fancy going to them once or twice a year, you're also in the right place. We Absolutely. Are not super nerds here. Well, we might be a little bit.
I think
we don't
are.
Go into it.
But you don't have to be a super nerd.
You don't have to be a super nerd, no. You just have to like theme parks.
After the end of this, I think we'll get a lot of people who are super nerds as well.
We are encouraging the nerdery.
We're not ashamed to be theme park nerds. And you know, anyone else, you're more than welcome to be a nerd as well here.
You are. This is what we do. We chat about theme parks, we chat about roller coasters, and we chat to some interesting people in the theme park industry as well. We are going to be doing that on today's episode, and our guest will be coming up fairly soon. First though, on last week's episode, first of all, we had John Wardley, which yep. is still kind of blowing my mind that he agreed mm-hmm. to come on our little podcast.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to that already, episode 1 of this new series, do go back and listen to it. If you've missed it, how have you missed it? But if you haven't missed it, go and listen to it, because he was just phenomenal, as we expected.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Really, honestly, it's just worth listening to again. And if you haven't listened to it, you need to listen to him, because he's got so much information, so much knowledge about all the things going on in theme parks. So it's definitely worth a listen.
He definitely gave us a little teaser as well about some changes for next year mm-hmm. at Alton Towers. So yeah, go and have check that out. It was amazing getting John on Parkcast. Like I said, we've got another guest coming up for you today. First though, we chatted last week about some of the new UK coasters for 2024, because it's a big year. It's a big year in the UK. It's also a big year worldwide. There's just loads of theme park news, openings, new stuff, cool stuff, which mm-hmm. is one of the reasons we brought the podcast back this year. But I thought we could have a little chat about some of those openings in Europe. One of which is the new Gerstlauer Eurofighter at Tivoli in Denmark, which mm-hmm. I'm going to pronounce as Vindfald.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that makes me sound like a Viking.
Yes, it's kind of a classic Eurofighter. It's got your classic vertical lift hill, two inversions, and it's set in the beautiful park in Tivoli in Denmark. So it looks beautiful. The background is beautiful. So,
A fan of the Eurofighter, or what's your feelings on the Eurofighter?
I enjoy them. I'm not a big fan of vertical lift hills, if I'm honest.
Oh.
I don't normally get nervous on roller coaster rides, but there's something about vertical lift hills I'm not such a big fan of. And it's annoying, because the smile is great at Alton Towers, but every time that vertical lift hill, I'll admit I do have to close my eyes slightly, and just once I get to the top, okay, we're all right, okay, we survived. And I can open my eyes again, and off we go. So.
It's that thought of being evacuated whilst in the vertical lift position.
I think that's what it is. I think that's probably where that comes from, definitely.
What else have we got? Intamin have got their first single rail coaster, an Intamin Hot Racer, and just to make it sound more fun, Makua. Again, correct me on my pronunciations here. We're going for wild names on roller coasters.
Well, again, I looked at this. So Makua is Hawaiian for to escape. And it's obviously designed, I know, just like on Rita. And I think it's designed, you've got those single track. So it's Intamin's first single track, single rail coasters, which I'll admit I haven't been on one of them yet. But they do look very odd at first when you see them, what they look like. It's a very interesting kind of track. But it looks really good, like with the racing theme, definitely.
Yeah, and it's an Intamin, isn't it? Intamin. Do they make bad rides?
I don't think so.
Intamin haven't made a bad ride in years.
To be fair, when someone puts the word Intamin at the front, I'm already sold. But if it's launched as well, so it'll have launches in it. And so if it's and I love launch coasters, so anything that's got a launch to it I'm sold. I'm there.
Yeah, interesting. Nice to see a sort of new style of coaster as well. You always think, what mm-hmm. is the next big development in coasters going to be? Where can we take them? So it's nice to see them trying something new, see how it rides, I guess, see if it's yeah. worth the risk. But I do like it when we get a whole new style, something just, you know, to see how that's going to feel and how it compares to your traditional sort of coaster. That's, by the way, Wallaby Rhone Alps in France, en France. Mm-hmm. Worth the ferry ride over there, maybe for that one. And then, of course, we've got the big one, which is not the big one. That's already open. Voltron Nevera at Europa Park is their new multi-launch coaster with that beyond vertical initial launch, which looks mental.
Yep.
Whole new area in Europa Park as well. Their theming's incredible. Everything they do over
it's
there.
It's next level theming in Europe. If you go into Europe for theme parks, Europa Park is up there absolutely for its theming, definitely. The whole area looks amazing. The Croatia themed area looks incredible. I love all the Tesla themed electricity and.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you know those Tesla things? They scare the hell out of me.
Is it because of 13?
Yeah.
Does it make you? Is it when you go on 13? Are you one of those people? Even though you know it's coming.
Yeah.
She counts the 13 and then it goes. Zzz.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, she does on paper. Does it always happen like that? Does it always happen that the audio
I think it's meant to. She counts to 13 and Tesla coil goes off.
Yeah. Is the audio always working? That is my question.
Okay, so I'll give you that one. So when the audio's not working and she's not counting 13, it is a bit of a... Okay.
Jump scare.
I'll let you have that one. But I do love all the electricity. That whole theming looks... It looks so good.
Yeah.
And the seats, the trains look really comfy. The seats look comfy. Lap bars again.
They look like sort of Chesterfield seats, don't they? Like the old leather.
I'm wondering how much
they've
spent
back
on these seats. They look very leather. Like these kind of it's the next level in roller coaster design is how to make your roller coaster seats that kind of extra level.
I'm all for that. I'll happily get involved in that research. I love a comfy seat. Yeah, it's the age I am.
John Lewis made kind of roller coaster trains now. We're going down that way.
Mack Rides X John Lewis.
Mm-hmm. That could be, you know.
But we've come up with something there. John Lewis, take it, run with it. We're just here to provide the content. looks incredible. Can't fault what they've done with it. Can't fault Mack Rides either. Big fan. Did you see some of the opening scenes, though? From opening day, because that looked beyond chaotic.
Yes, I've seen some footage of opening day and it didn't look great. From what I've seen, unfortunately, I've not been there, but from what I've seen, it looked like there was a large crowd of people in a very small confined space with a very small number of staff trying to navigate the amount of people trying to get through. And obviously that's people who were obviously coming through the main entrance and through the gates, but also people who are staying on site as well in the hotels at Europa Park and obviously all trying to navigate to this one particular area. And then you've got one person trying to tell people go this way and sending people that way.
There was a lot of bottlenecks, weren't there? That's what it looked like to me. I've worked in events for a long time. I've done a lot of event management and also a lot of event planning where we plan for situations like that. And just with that hat on, I was watching this thinking, I can't imagine that this hasn't been event planned, but it almost looks like it hasn't, just in the way that it happened. It was almost like they expected, if you've got someone there with a jacket on that says Europa Park or security, it doesn't matter if it's just one guy, people will pay attention to him. And that was just never going to happen. I mean, you've got a crowd of excited roller coaster fans ready for a new day, first train that, you know, everyone's trying to get on it. That one guy could be saying whatever he wanted to. No one was going to listen. Everyone was going to follow the crowd. And so harsh on him. So obviously everyone kind of milled past him and onto the next hold point. And it was those hold points to me that made me feel a little bit uncomfortable from an event planning point of view, just because I know how easy it is for a crowd surge to happen. And if a crowd surge does happen, how dangerous that is.
Absolutely.
It just seemed a bit of a strange way to do it to me, to have these stop start holds where it's like a push, a rush. Yes, we're all excited. Run. Oh, stop us again. Push, run. We're all excited. Run. Because that's, you're just kind of building up the tension with the crowd in that kind of situation. I don't know. I kind of feel like, there must be a better way of doing this. And I don't know what it is, because I don't know the intricacies of that park and its layout and what they could potentially do and how they could you know, form an orderly queue, so to speak, as Brits like to do.
Yep.
But I just feel like that probably wasn't the answer. And I think it was more luck rather than anything else that it wasn't a bit more of a disaster.
But how do the pots get to this point? Because obviously they want people to be excited about their new rides and new roller coasters. And I was just trying to think this through. I mean, do the park build up the hype, but without realizing or naively thinking how many people they're going to get?
I don't know. I see, you know, I think for them, it's like the more people, the better on paper. Obviously, it's just how do you manage a manic crowd, which is only going to be one day. After day one, that is never going to happen again. And it's actually probably after hour one, hour two.
Yeah.
But how do you go from, I've got a huge group of people who all want to be at the front of this group of people. How do we manage that without killing everyone's enthusiasm and excitement? And it's a tricky one, and there's going to be a decision to be made somewhere. It's that risk balance, isn't it? It's, do we literally hand out numbers of your number one, your number two, your number three, which kills all the buzz and the excitement, but is the safest way to do it?
Because also you've got people from all over the places. But I think now theme park enthusiasts, it's kind of changed now, because I think before, say going back to 1994, you probably would have a few people from different countries, but most within the UK. Whereas I feel now people who are wanting to be there and make sure they've got the first, you know, footage, means you've got a lot of people from lots of other countries also descending on the park as well. So not just people from Germany, but you'll have people who are, you know, really into the theme parks in France, Britain. You know, I've seen already, you know, a good number of people in the UK who obviously have theme park, blogs and vlogs and all sorts of things who've been there as well. So if you add them in, plus the people in Germany, it creates a huge, demand now for the newest coasters and newest rides out there.
I think that's also the thing with the, you know, your YouTubers and vloggers and stuff like that. For them, their business, their livelihood depends on them being the first. It depends on them getting that content out the first, because if you're not the first, someone else will be, and their videos will get watched and yours won't. And you literally lose money by not being first. So, yeah, the more and more of that we see, like you say, the more demand, the more pressure. I don't know. I think I would hope there was a post opening debrief after that, and maybe there was a few sort of raised eyebrows and a right, okay, next time we're gonna need a different way to do this. I would hope so. That's what I would have done. But I guess you don't ever really know. Have you ever been to a big ride opening on opening day? I actively avoid it because I hate crowds. But yeah, have you ever?
No,
I've definitely
done a couple. And I was just thinking like particular ones. Obviously the Nemesis one comes to mind. Nemesis Reborn was obviously our most recent one in the UK. Whether that's a British thing that we're so good at queuing and being able to queue that actually, because it was, you know, good 5 hours for people to get on, but it wasn't done in a mass. I know people run because people do. And it's quite a way to run to Forbidden Valley from Tower Street. If you're going to run that way.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to naturally filter out some of that crowd,
exactly.
Isn't it?
I remember when the Smiler opened in 2013. And that was really interesting as well, because it kind of been delayed. So Smiler had been delayed. It was meant to have been March. Then it was May. Then it was this date in May. And no one really knew. And then word got out that it was going to open. And I think it got to a point where there's about beyond 3 hour queue. But the part were telling people not to queue, go on, it's not opening. But no one was budging because there's been this rumor that it was going to be opening to the guests today. And the Smiler one was an interesting one because they never did this big reveal. Let's have a celebrity guest like they'd done in the 90s with Alton Towers rides. You'd had like celebrities opening these different rides. Smiler didn't have that, but yet there was still this incredible atmosphere around that opening. But again, it was done in a way that again was a bit chaotic. That one I remember. I also remember when Subterra opened, Nemesis Subterra opened as well in 2012. And so we're talking 12 years ago. And that, I think the park must have hyped it up into a certain way, that into a frenzy, that there was a huge queue for that. And I think people were very disappointed when they realized the ride was half finished.
Yeah.
And they were queuing up for a ride that wasn't actually finished. I think we seem to do well over here in the UK about being able to do it safely.
Yeah.
But I think there is a big demand now for people getting that first ride, being there first. And it has been, because I know Subterra was 12 years ago, and even when 13 opened as well, I remember opening day for 13 was huge. But there just seems to be a big demand. But I think we need to try and how we approach it and do it safely, and making sure everyone gets on the ride, but everyone gets on it safely without there being a crush of people.
Yeah, I think the one thing that didn't happen in those instances was these various holds sort of getting to one point and then being held, which effectively allows the rest of the crowd to catch up with the first, mm-hmm. with the leaders of the crowd. And so you then get that mad crush again. So maybe, mm-hmm. maybe that's it. Obviously, Europa Park is just an insanely huge park. And if they didn't have those holds, I don't know. For me, yeah. in a way, I think it would have been better without the holds. You get there, you naturally filter the crowd, because some people are going to run faster than others. Some people are going to, mm-hmm. you know, after 5 minutes of running, go, actually, let's just do a brisk walk instead. But yeah, definitely an interesting point for discussion. Maybe if you've been in a queue for an opening day ride, you've had an experience, share it with us on our socials. We'd love to hear from you on that. Mm-hmm. For now, though, I think it's just about time that we introduced today's guest. He is what I would describe as the OG UK roller coaster enthusiast. Delighted to have him on the show. It's Andy Hine.
Podcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.
It's Andy Hine from the Roller Coaster Club of Great Britain. Welcome to Parkcast.
Thank you for having me.
I say the OG because as far back as I can remember, you were always the person wheeled out whenever there was anything being talked about, roller coasters, theme parks. You would be there popping up.
Yep, it's 36 years they've been dragging me out for comments.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So the Coaster Club, that was set up in, is it 1988?
August 11th, 1988.
You even remember the date. imprinted.
The first trip was to Margate, Dreamland in Margate.
Had
11 people attend. And some of those people are still members today. And their children are members. And their children's children are members.
Oh, wow.
That makes me feel old.
Wow.
It's gone through a lot of generations. I mean, we'll come on and obviously we'll talk in detail about the club and everything that you've done with it. I suppose to kick us off, can you remember your first roller coaster that you ever went on?
Yes. Years ago, British Rail, when it was still British Rail, they used to do something called a Merrymaker. And it was where they tried to fill trains at weekends with just day trips to places. And my parents got a very cheap day trip to Blackpool, and we went to Blackpool Pleasure Beach. And I'm 6 years old at the time, and I didn't have a clue about roller coasters and things. So I'd always seen pictures of them and looked nice, but at that time we didn't have all the luxury we've got now. And I went on the ride, the Grand National, the famous Grand National, and I had my eyes closed the whole way round. And I thought I was going upside down. You know, your brain does crazy things if you ride with your eyes closed. And at the end of it, something made me think, I really want to do that again and see what just happened. And I also couldn't work out how I'd gone from the left lane to the right lane, because at 6 years old, you do not understand Mobius loops. And
I still don't understand it, to be honest. I'm confused every time I come back in.
So I went on it, and from that moment, I loved it. And then I went on all the other rides that I could there. And obviously back then it was the Revolution was the only big steel coaster there, Steeplechase. But it's pre-Avalanche and all those sort of rides. And I then, when we came back to London, I went to the library and said, I want a book where all the roller coasters are. And the librarian said, there isn't one. You got to remember, this this is very early 70s, so there is no internet. And she jokingly said, you'll have to write one. And I thought, there's an idea, but I'm very young.
And, I can't hold a pen yet.
Yeah. So I started writing letters to tourist offices, just saying, have you got any amusement parks or theme parks in your town? And literally I wrote to Sussex and Weymouth and all these different places, just asking, trying to compile this list. And the idea was to do a book at some point. But then internet came along and she wouldn't sell a theme park book like that anymore, because everyone just looks on the internet at maps and things and sees where they are, roller coaster database or whatever.
I was going to say, you're like the paper version of RCDB.
Yeah.
So about.
But in that process of gathering all that information, I began to see people at parks. So I started, as I got older, I started to travel to parks myself. And that's what gave me the idea, because when you see the same people at parks, I began to realize there's more than me who's doing this. Mm. Now, of course, it'd be quite normal that millions of people doing it. But back then it was quite unique. And how it all came about was Chessington World of Adventures, Chessington Zoo back then. They said, we are going to build the first swing coaster outside America, the Vampire. Do you want to come along and see all the plans and things? So I did. I met John Maudley back then, so he's in the early 80s, and we had a good chat about it. And I thought, oh, here's an idea to get some people together to help support it. And it all sort of grew from there, really. And I never intended 36 years later to still be doing it. It was just, let's get a group together so that we could ride the Vampire and help promote the new ride. And here we are all these years later doing it again.
So how did you get people involved back then? And because obviously with social media now, it's very easy to communicate, send things out to people, post things about, I'm going to start this and do this. Well, how did you do that back then?
Originally, when I saw people I recognised from previous visits, I just went up and gave them a card with my address on. Yeah, back then you didn't worry about giving out that sort of personal details. Now I'd be very worried about giving my private address out, but back then you didn't care. And you give your phone number out, which would be a landline, if your listeners know what that is.
Big button plugged into the wall.
Yeah,
and dial Nan's house.
And you had to dial the number, individual number at a time. But anyway, so I started putting up some little notes on the walls as you get off of rides. Parks weren't so corporate then, so they didn't have so many rules about imagery and things. So you could just stick up a, if you like roller coasters, contact me sign. And then a TV company contacted me, and they were based in Cumbria and Carlisle, I think. So Carlisle. And they contacted me and said, we've got a new television program coming out called Ghost Train. And it's filmed in a ghost train. And we want you to be on the first program and talk about roller coasters. So I went all out there to do that. Jimmy Cricket was also a guest on there, the famous Irish comedian. And I just talked about roller coasters. And that meant I got more people interested. And during this time, we were helping rebuild a wild mouse roller coaster, a traditional wooden one, that was on the roof of a Littlehampton amusement park. And it was sold to an enthusiast called David Pickstone. And he moved it piece by piece to Breen Sands in Somerset. No plans, we just had notes about where bits went. And we went down there and we all got a group together and we built it, put it back together again, painted it, upholstered the seats on the trains, everything. Had it safety checked. And we operated it, we ran it. And the News of the World, which was a famous newspaper at the time on a Sunday, they had a supplementary magazine called You Magazine, and they wanted to feature that in their magazine. And that moment on, and I thought, now I've got all these people and I've got nothing to tell them anymore, because Chessington had opened by now. So I started the newsletter. I didn't even have a word processor or anything. I had a typewriter. So I would type an article 1 inch wide, new line, 1 inch, new line, 1 inch. And then I'd do another article 2 inches wide, then cut it out with scissors and print stick it to a piece of paper, then photocopy it to make it look like it was all nicely laid out. How things have changed. and would send that. It was only a single sheet, and it would just have any news that anybody would give me from theme parks. Now, of course, they're quite happy to send you stuff every single day. You know, if they've got a new ice cream, they'll tell you about it now in a press release.
It's important news, to be fair.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the kind of news I'm interested in. I don't know about anyone else.
But the big problem I had over as the club progressed, the magazine got bigger and bigger, but it takes time to put together and print when you're doing a physical printed magazine. And it was every 8 weeks. And as internet got bigger and bigger, I could be putting news in that was now 8 weeks old. Because if the news came out the day after I just sent it out in the post, it wouldn't be sent out for another 8 weeks. So it became a bit obsolete. So I took it online, and the members now get an interactive version of it. So if the parks released a promotional video of the ride or an animation or something, they just click on that link and they can see it. So now the magazine's still there, but it's all online. But what it does mean is I can email it to them instantly. And if there's a news flash, when say Cedar Point announced top 3 or 2 was really happening, I could send that out mid month, because I can quickly just do a one-off magazine with one news story in. So it's just got very much more interactive. I'm a bit older now, so keeping up with that technology was not easy.
But you've done it, yeah. And that's the thing, you've managed to move the club with the times. It's interesting looking back. How do you think roller coaster enthusiasts were kind of viewed back when you started?
I think the parks looked at us as a bit eccentric.
Yeah.
Jeff, I think they still do, to be fair.
Yeah. I think sadly some parks now see us as a bit of annoyance. And it's a shame, but it's partly because when I was the only club in the UK, and then we've got our friends, the European Coaster Club, who were Europe, and ACE, the American Coaster Enthusiast, that was it pretty much worldwide. But now you have all these YouTubers and things but they get 5 followers and they call themselves an influencer.
Yeah.
And it annoys the parks because they contact the parks and say, we want this and we want that and we deserve this because we've promoted this for you. But it's completely untangible. You can't prove that because somebody says something online, 1,000 people went to the park. Whereas I have all my records from the years proving I've taken over 30,000 people to Blackpool Pleasure Beach on specific days. Where I've got good connections with parks and history of parks, it's nice. When I deal with a new park and they see enthusiasts now as not how they used to, that's a little bit more difficult. And it's a real shame because all I ever wanted to do, and I have a day job, this is still my hobby, jobby. All I ever wanted to do was get people together who like roller coasters and just have fun together. And the proof is we've had 20 marriages in the club, people who've met in the club and then subsequently got married. So the social bit works well.
It's interesting, Andy, really? You say that because you've got married on a roller coaster, haven't you?
I did. It's been up and down ever since.
I was wondering how many one-liners we were going to get in this podcast.
No, as long as we keep it on track, we're all right.
I made a suggestion when to my wife or my fiance at the time about getting married on Oblivion. Because I really wanted to do the idea of, you know, when you go round the top,
yep.
And as you get to the end, and then whoever the vicar says, I now pronounce you husband and wife, and then you go down the drop and do that whole. And I think that would be great, but it didn't go down well. So we did get married on a roller coaster. I tried to make the suggestion, but you've actually got married on a roller coaster as well.
If you meet someone in the club, you see, you already know they like roller coasters. So that issue is out of the way before you start.
Yeah, but you've also was that was on the Grand National as well, wasn't it, in Blackpool?
Yes.
Do you still have the plaque as well? You were given a plaque on one of those trains as well, Andy, didn't you?
That's on the front of the red train. It's called the Andy Hine train. And that was that was a very nice honour. I get a bit embarrassed by those things. But it was a very nice honour by Geoffrey Thompson, who wanted to show that the industry supported what I was doing as a result of me getting given an MBE by the Queen for promoting tourism in the UK. And he said the parks need to show it as well. So he did that. So I was very touched on it. I didn't know that was coming. We were having an exclusive ride session at one of the club events, and we got up on the platform, and why is there a blanket over the front of the train? Is there a problem? And they revealed it. So it was
That's amazing.
It must have been nice. It sort of came full circle for you if that was your first coaster, and then suddenly you've got a train dedicated to you on it. It's like, wow, I didn't expect this like all those years ago.
No, very touching. And of course, I have to always make sure when I go up there, I've got to ride the red train. Unfortunately, I get a lot of abuse online about that, but that's the modern world of internet trolls, isn't it?
They are everywhere.
Yeah.
Obviously, we touched on how it's changed and how enthusiasts have maybe changed since you started the club. Do you see that roller coaster enthusiasm has kind of changed as well? In my mind, I mean, I became an enthusiast. I was probably, this is probably like mid 90s, I would say. And you just didn't, you couldn't really get hyped up about stuff because the internet didn't exist. So, you know, you plans and things like that weren't really leaked anywhere. You certainly weren't discussing what a theme park might be putting in 8 years' time advance, because you had no idea. It was off. Mm. You would not have those discussions. It was too far beyond the sort of realms of possibility. So do you see how we've, as enthusiasts, kind of changed since then with the internet in how much we have access to and what we know?
Definitely. And I think the level of enthusiasm has got intense now, much more intense than it ever used to be. As you say about the plans and things, now enthusiasts are down local planning offices at Staffordshire looking for what are Alton doing next and things. And there's a lot of secrecy in the amusement park business. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to be involved where I do sign confidentiality agreements. I am privileged to get information because I'm trusted with it, but I sign the relevant documentation. And what they don't understand when they go trawling desperately trying to find out these little snippets, they can sometimes muck up a long-term plan for the park, particularly if it's something a bit more secret that they're doing and they don't want other parks to know about. It's not so bad in this country, but certainly in America, where there's always a coaster, although that might change now that Six Flags and Cedar Fair have merged, they're all one family, that there won't be so much secrecy going on, but it does muck it up a little bit sometimes when they get so intense. And it's hard because you don't want to rein in someone's enthusiasm, but sometimes they need to stop and think, why is a park doing something the way it is? You see a lot of on certain forums, if they're called forums still, on Facebook groups, a lot of negativity towards certain parks, and I sit quietly. I don't ever respond, just to avoid abuse. But I sometimes think it's not like playing Roller Coaster Tycoon. You can't just hit the reset button and put a new ride in. Some of these things take years of planning and planning applications and public inquiries and all these things. And, you know, a recent example is the Pleasure Beach, the River Caves isn't running at the moment. And people are saying, oh, Amanda's got to go. She's running it down. So there's a technical issue that this ride that was built originally in 1906, the parts are not, that company that built it is long gone. They have to get parts specifically made. They take time and they don't keep a whole stack of all the parts required because that's just a waste of money and so on. And it frustrates me that sometimes enthusiasts get so involved and intense that they think they know best how to run something. And they don't, of course. It's not like that in the real world.
I mean, the thing is with the River Caves, the easy thing for the park to do would be, well, we'll just shut it. We'll close it and we'll demolish it. Yeah. So the fact that hasn't happened, I don't know. I for me, it's fairly obvious that there is work going on behind the scenes. But I guess for everyone, maybe it's not obvious. Maybe we're a culture now that demands things now. Well, I think we also have an entitlement. We think we deserve to know these things.
Yes, yeah, it's like with the Speedway. People getting up in arms about that, and I said, and somebody said to me recently about the Speedway and how disgraceful it is they're taking that out, and I said, when did you last ride it? And I said, oh, I can't remember, more than 10 years ago. I said, that's why nobody rides it. It's not bringing, nobody's going to rush to the Pleasure Beach for the Speedway anymore. It does frustrate me sometimes, because we instead of being experts on the parks, which they're not, they should be supporting the parks, and If they don't want somebody to go, we'll try and get people to go there and ride it.
So it's interesting, Andy, you're talking about back to when social media wasn't around again. When Oblivion was being built, for example, that was the one time for me I can remember that kind of hype starting, but without social media. Because I remember when they put the big fencing up, they did all that. They had the actor walking up and down. The security guard. They had the sound effects, the Oblivion kind of voice that they had the whole. But what was amazing back then was that you just didn't know. There was no way you could possibly know. I mean, do you remember a ride that you were particularly hyped about before the kind of social media internet days?
Oh, that's a difficult one, because Oblivion is a really good example, and the marketing that they did was fantastic, keeping it all secret. But unfortunately, I knew what was coming because we were filming a television program. I think it was called Terror Technicians or something like that. So I already knew what was happening, but I had to keep running up to this fence in the field in the program.
Oh, yes,
and talking about piles of mud.
Yeah,
I wonder what's coming. What are they doing? Why? Where's that? You know, knowing exactly what was happening, but I had to pretend I didn't know for the TV, because TV works in strange ways to make the program watchable. So it was hard to get caught up in the marketing of that, because I knew what was happening there. Well, a more modern example is the Wicker Man. My campaign was Real Coasters Are Made of Wood. And I kept harassing Nick Varney, who was the CEO at the time. And I kept saying to him, look, don't keep putting in these record-breaking rides. You keep putting in these, you're getting the world's first something, but you end up with the world's most unreliable. And then the moment you put in something, and we'll pick on Oblivion, Busch Gardens or any, they then put in a better version with inversions and things. So you end up with something that's new, but for a very short period of time. I said, why don't you just put something in that's fun from day one? And the unique selling point is it stays fun always. And he was very, well, I'm not sure about it. So he said, come down to the office in Poole, to the head office, and convince the board. So I went down to Paul, and it was himself and Fish and a few other board members. And I did this massive presentation about wood and why wood is good. I'd also got people like Dick Knoble from Knoble's Park to say why they've got so many wooden coasters. I got Holiday World to say why they've got so many wooden coasters. I made sure that I got all the park owners who had wood to say why they have wood. And then I got members to say why they wanted wood. And then I did a piece on all the manufacturers to choose from, making clear that it should either be GCI or Gravity Group and not the three letters starting in R and ending in C. because I said it wouldn't be a real wooden coaster.
Seems crazy to me that you were kind of given the task of convincing the Merlin board they should what coaster they should build. You'd have thought that their own sort of R&D marketing research would have said, okay, this is a good idea or it isn't. Or was it that they were just like saying, well, the marketing research is saying it's not a good idea?
That's what happened. If you looked at the concepts of some of the rides they were looking at, when they showed wooden pictures of wooden coasters to public, people said, oh no, that's old and rickety, because they only could compare it in this country to Blackpool and Yarmouth and Dreamland in Margate, which are all old rides. There's no denying they're all from the 20s and 30s. Or because the public who are non-enthusiast have not been to the States and ridden the latest GCI Gravity Group Woodies, which are crazy. I mean, if you've ridden a Voyage at Holiday World, I mean, that's faster than stealth. It's a crazy ride. And so when they're doing their research, the public are being presented with pictures and they're not understanding the background. And so I said to the board, why are you hung up on what it's made of? If you built the new ride, as long as your marketing sold the ride and the concept, as in the, so for example, the Wicker Man story and so on, you don't have to tell them it's wood. The public aren't that fussed. They're not going to queue for 2 hours, get to the front, look at it and go, it's wooden, I'm not going on it now, and walk off.
Yeah.
They're going to ride it. And I said, and the moment they've ridden it once, they're going to know wood is good. And it will sell itself then. And by, if it opened on Saturday, by the Monday, everybody's going to go back to work or school and say, did the new coaster at Alton Towers? It's fantastic. We're the ones who want wood and steel, not the public. They don't care. They just want a great fun ride that they don't have to queue 6 hours to get on. So a few weeks after that meeting, Nick Varney sent me an email to say that they were going to go with it. But we were having our annual, what was called then, Loopathon event at Alton Towers. And it's quite tradition that every lunchtime, one of the managers joins us and we have a question and answer session. And I always say, where's the wood? Now, I knew the wood was coming and he knew the wood was coming. But we had to agree that if I didn't harass him about wood, the audience, which was about 250 of my members, would know something was coming. So so even though we knew the wood was coming, we had to pretend we didn't know. And wow. And I still had to say, where's the wood? And he was like, well, we're still looking into it. And I had to argue why they should get it, even though we knew. So it was quite fun. And you know, one of the nicest things was that after it opened and things, Nick Varney said to me, don't say you told me so, but I wish we'd done this sooner. So I sent him a message and said, I told you so.
Well, yeah, I think the thing is that roller coaster is, I think in with the theming as well, what they've done with it, it's for me personally, it's up there as one of my favorite roller coasters at the park now. And I've been on lots of wooden coasters, but it is interesting when you see people who talk about it, you're thinking, you know, like you were saying about, we don't tend to say we know better, but sometimes... We do.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. There are some privileges to being an enthusiast, and one of them is knowing what's good and what's not. And
exactly.
You know, if they said we're going to put in an old style, so the old Vekoma, not new Vekoma, an old Vekoma suspended looping coaster or this wooden coaster, obviously on pictures the public would go, that looks interesting, that lots of loops and things and you're hanging. So they would think that would be better than the wooden coaster. But as enthusiasts, we would know, no way is that better. You want the wood. And
not unless you particularly enjoy having a headache, in which case might win out.
Alleged.
Andy, I'm going to take you back to 2002. I hope you can remember. Summer 2002, you were on Channel 5. There was a breakfast show. And throughout the week, they were doing a game show on a roller coaster. So every day you took the host to a different roller coaster, and they had to ask contestants questions whilst going around on this roller coaster.
Yeah, it was called the program was called Rise, and it replaced the Big Brother.
That's right.
Big Breakfast.
And one of the days you went on Megaphobia, and up to this point, I don't think I'd been on a wooden coaster. You see, so I watched it, and I was like, "Oh, I've been on that one. I've been on Nemesis, and you know when you went through, but I hadn't done that one." And it was this passion you had was different, I think, from Megaphobia. Because I think the other coasters were all steel coasters that week. Yeah. And it was, and I have been on Megaphobia quite a few times now, but it was that first time going to go, I see it, I get it now, because I hadn't really been on one. And then when you do, you feel this, there's this different feeling. It's hard to explain if you've never been on a wooden coaster, but there is that sensation that is so different from a steel coaster for me. How would you explain why wooden coasters are something you are really passionate about?
I think it's the shake, rattle and roll. A steel roller coaster is very clinical. The polyurethane wheels stuck to the track and you ride it and it's always the same pretty much. Whereas the wooden coaster can depend on the weather, the temperature, so on as to how it rides. And I like to describe a lot of steel coasters are to me jazz. At the end of the ride, you think, nice. Whereas wooden coasters are rock and roll. At the end of that ride, you know, I've ridden it. I've just experienced something. And with a wooden coaster, you get on smiling and you usually get off laughing because what just happened? That was brilliant. And you want to go around again. So it just promotes a completely different emotion. And I think with wooden coasters, it's a daring ride. And a steel coaster is, I dare you to ride. Because you see like that 200 foot high ride, you go, I dare you to do that. And you do it and you get off and you think, yep, done that. What's next then? Whereas a wooden coaster, you get off and you think, that was so much fun. And can we do that again? And you go around again.
Do you have a particular way of rating roller coasters, Andy? So comparing, like, so suppose if we put wooden and steel to one side, what makes a great roller coaster for you?
I smile a lot. And for me, it's the grin factor. If at the end of the ride, I'm smiling more than when I got on the ride, it's done its job. And if I just want to go around again or stay on if you're allowed, then that's the perfect ride for me. If I've had to sit on that ride and brace myself for the ear bashing or the jolts or whatever, that's not good. And that goes, you know, wooden coasters can be uncomfortable too. I'm not separating those. But if I can sit back, relax and enjoy the ride and at the end of it, it leaves me wanting to go again, then it's done its job. And when I go to parks now, and I'm very privileged, I've been to most parks around the world. I now can go to a big park and know, don't need to do that. Don't need to do that. I will have done them. I will always go. I'll always get, if I'm going to talk enthusiast, I'll go for the tick. I don't chase ticks. I'm not going to drive 80 miles to get a little kiddie coaster in a shopping mall like some enthusiasts do. But if I'm in Cedar Point, I know I don't need to do the corkscrew anymore. I've done it enough times. It's not the best ride in the park now. Mm-hmm. Whereas I will always do Magnum because to me that's crazy. Millennium Force is a good ride. Have you been to Cedar Point?
It's a sore topic for me. Okay. Andy, I'll be honest. I had a trip planned and booked for the summer of 2020, and obviously it got cancelled. And it's okay. I mean, I've only been wanting to go for about 20 years, so it's not like it was a major problem for me or anything like that.
Don't ask me how many times I've been.
I don't want to know, honestly.
I won't tell you that when I fly there in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it'll be my 50th time.
Oh, for goodness sake!
But I would go on Magnum more than Millennium Force because Magnum is wild, but it's not unrideably wild. I would call it a rough rider. Desperado's like this, the one in the desert in Vegas.
I'm sensing a theme with your Arrow classics here.
Yeah, if you imagine being beaten up in the school playground by the bullies, and the moment they stop beating you up, you're not in pain. It's like that. You go around that ride and you are beaten up on it. But at the end of it, you're not in any pain. It's just fun. unlike some SLCs where you get beaten up and at the end of it, you've then got bad ears, headache for the rest of the day. So it's a strange way of describing them, but hopefully you get what I mean. And there are wooden coasters, wooden coasters. When you're rattling down that track, it's just that extra feeling of being completely out of control.
We've touched on Cedar Point now. So is Magnum the ride that the big one should have been? How do you kind of pitch those two against each other? As someone who hasn't been on Magnum, and obviously Geoffrey Thompson's famous words were, "I want one like that, but bigger."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he achieve it?
Or John Wardley's famous words, anyone can build a coaster with a big drop and then build Oblivion straight after.
Yeah.
Sorry, John, if you're listening. The problem with the big one is he didn't have the length to do this dip after dip after dip because Cedar Point have built it along the shoreline. And it gets to the very end, does a U-turn and comes back again, doing the same thing, but smaller. It's on smaller dips. And the Pleasure Beach, because hasn't got that privilege. It's 42 acres in size. And it's and so it's more of an L shape. It just could not get the same momentum going on those dips, because after those two big dips, it has to do its U-turn near the Grand National and come back again. So it just doesn't build up that momentum. I have to, on opening day of Magnum, there was an interesting thing. I won't use the expletives that were used, but the third drop on Magnum before it got a reprofile and the pretzel turn got a reprofile, there was so much airtime as it came over that hill that as the train came down, and there was a lot of media on there, all we heard was sugar type word. So it got nicknamed the oh sugar drop till it got reprofiled and they took it away. But it was amazing because you felt like you weren't in the seat from the top of the dip to the bottom of the dip. It was a crazy ride there.
Do you ever get nervous, Andy, on any rides? Like, obviously you've been on so many different roller coasters, and part of, I think, like for me, a roller coaster has that element of, oh goodness, this is high, or you know, and then you get the achievement of when you've come off the ride, you're like, oh, I did it, or you're smiling, you know, with a huge grin. Do you ever get any nerves on any particular ones?
Not so much on roller coasters. I've had people say, oh, you must be brave doing what you do, and I think no, you're only brave if you do something you're scared of. I love getting on roller coasters, so there's no bravery there. Stupidity sometimes, but not bravery. but some other rides, I did the sky jump off the Stratosphere in Vegas, and that's where you just run and jump off the top of the 1,000-foot hotel, and you have a rope attached to you, and as you plummet down to the ground, a fan on the roof slows you down before you hit the ground. As I was running to jump off, and I was the first one of the day in front of the group, my view is if I'm seen to do it, they'll do it. I'm the instigator of all trouble and fun. And I was thinking, what if their carabiners aren't attached properly? And of course I know there's all safety checks and it's fine. But my legs were quite shaky there, before jumping off. And when I did, the 300-foot sky coaster in, Orlando, it was during the IARPA convention. And the ride wasn't opening to the public till the Saturday, but the boss man, Stan, said, come down and check it out on Wednesday. And he said, I'll come on with you. So we're up there, we're up 300 feet in the air. And I said, well, when does it open to public? He said, the weekend. We'd still got to do some checks yet. And I'm thinking, what? I'm 300 foot up in the air and you haven't done all the checks yet. And then I said, what, you're going to pull the cord? He said, no. And this was midnight. He said, the fireworks at Epcot are about to start. We'll be able to see them from here. Let's watch them. And we hung up there, man, watching the fireworks before he pulled the cord. And all the time, I don't know if you've done a sky coaster, all the time it's quite creaky when you're hanging there.
Yeah, that sounds like my worst nightmare. As a roller coaster fan who is actually scared of heights, which is my bizarre combination, yeah, that sounds like my worst nightmare. The only sky coaster I've done is Vertigo at Oakwood, and that was high enough.
Now, that's one of the best examples, though. The smaller they are, the better, because they swing more. The problem with the one at Kissimmee was the cables are so long, 300-foot cable, the drag on them is so much. Once you fly through the arch once, you pretty much then swing back and it's over, whereas Oakwood's one keeps on swinging.
But obviously we've gone on to sort of other rides, not coasting. No, that's good. I'm kind of wondering if there's anything else. Is there a certain type of ride that you're a big fan of that isn't a coaster and something that you really don't like?
I love waltzers.
Okay.
And unfortunately, American waltzers, which are called tilt-a-whirls, are not so much fun because they run them too slow. So it has to be a typical British waltzer. And usually if it's one on the travelling fairs,
they just spin you around.
Spin the cars. Yeah, I love it. I love the speed. And when you watch it off the ride, they're not actually going that fast. But when you're on it, you feel those G-forces you spin round and round. I love it. You can never have a waltzer that's too intense.
Yeah. It's weird that you wouldn't get one permanently installed now, would you? Like new, even though they are really intense, really good fun. No one's done a big, like, well-themed waltzer.
No, I think that the Pleasure Beach did have one in the dome near Infusion, but that's gone now. Folly Farm has a traditional original one that they've restored, but it doesn't have men spinning it because it's a children's fun park and not travelling fair. And the one on the pier at Blackpool, South Pier Blackpool, is not too bad, but again, nobody's nobody's giving it a kick to get it an extra spin on it.
You need to get an ERS on the waltzer at South Pier and go and spin them yourself.
EWS.
Go for it. I'd go on one of them. What about what you really don't like? So, I mean, it's well known on this podcast, I hate drop towers. Aforementioned fear of heights. What is it that you don't like?
Can I tell you a story about a drop tower?
Oh, is it going to make me off even more?
I was on the drop zone at King's Island, 415 feet.
No, immediately no.
And the reason I went on it, and I'd actually worked out as well where I had to get on because it rotates on the way up. I worked out which seat I needed to sit in because at the time they were building Son of Beast, the looping wooden coaster. So I worked out where I needed to sit so that I'd at the very top I'd be facing the Son of Beast. Now, it got to the top and there was a clunk noise.
It's always what you want.
And it stopped. And it eventually, I mean, you know what the seating's like on there. Your feet are dangling. It's very Nemesis style. Your feet are dangling. You've got overhead restraint and a seatbelt between your legs. And they started putting out announcements. Please do not stand up. And I'm thinking, I'm 415 feet in the air with my feet dangling and overhead restraint. How do you think I'm going to stand up? And where do you think I'm going to stand up? Anyway, in my pocket was my small camera. Didn't have mobile phones back then. I'm now stuck facing the building of Son of Beast. So I am taking as many pictures as I can on a camera that had film in it.
Wow.
So I've got 36 chances to get good pictures of the building of Son of Beast before the film runs out. That'll be alien to most people listening, won't it?
Yeah.
And I've got an American woman shouting in my ear, I'm going to sue the park for this. And I'm thinking,
classic.
What a privilege. I'm stuck at the top of a 415-foot tower taking construction photos of what was going to be the biggest wooden coaster in the world at the time. Certainly not the best when it opened, but anyway, the biggest at the time. And eventually they had to winch us down from the drop tower.
Oh, wow.
So you would have probably hated that.
I would have. I would have simply passed out. That's what would have happened in that circumstance. But it wouldn't have happened because I wouldn't have gotten in the first place. You're taking a club trip over to America, like you said, in the next couple of weeks. How many American trips have you done since you started the club, do you know?
This would be the 21st trip that I've taken a large group to the States in. This one has 70. They vary between 60 and 100 depending where we go and how many times we've been to certain places. And what's new, I knew top three or two was coming, but I couldn't put that into publicity when I sold the trip because it hadn't been announced then. So I had to sell it on the fact we were going to Holiday World to do the voyage and we were going to go and ride the reprofiled beast with its extra angled drop and things like that. And Dr. Diabolical was at Fiesta Texas, which was new since we last went there. So I had to sell it on things like that, knowing that the biggest surprise was going to be a top three or two.
Yeah. And are you looking forward to that as a ride? Obviously, you know, we've talked about steel woodies. Yeah. It's a steel coaster. It's a short steel coaster, albeit longer than it was. But do you still get a real level of excitement about a new ride?
I'm intrigued by this one because Topfield Dragster, sorry, the original, was so unique when it came about. You sat there and the lights went red, 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 green, and it launched at 120 miles an hour and up and over the top hat or not, but we'll come back to that in a minute. and now, of course, it doesn't do that. It launches forward, goes up so many feet, and then it rolls backwards, gets launched backwards up 300 odd feet, comes back down and launches forward again. So I was a bit concerned that initial sitting dead still and then 2 seconds later doing 120 miles an hour, that was a rush of a feeling. And you haven't got that anymore because the initial launch, I think, is about 80 miles an hour now, stealth style. So, which is still fast, though. I mean, you're still going to feel it. You know, who's counting when you get that speed? But the reports coming in are very good. So I'm quite intrigued to see how it goes. Obviously, you won't get rollbacks anymore, but then you're technically all getting a rollback anyway
That's
because it's designed to roll back.
Yeah.
It's just not that unexpected rollback where it does get to the top and stops and drops back.
Have you ever had one of them?
Mm. I had 7 rollbacks.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Back to back.
When you're doing a club trip to Cedar Point and they give you exclusive ride session first thing in the morning, the wheels are cold.
Yeah.
So it's quite a chance that it was not going to make it. One of the best things that ever happened to us, though, was we had a late ERS on it, midnight, and it had been an hour since it had run. And we got a rollback on it. There was only about 60 of us in the and so nearly everybody got a rollback, and 7 people didn't. So they said, "We'll put you on the last train then." But what the engineer had forgot to do was adjust the launch power, because he boosted it to get the full train over from the previous rollbacks. So now there's only 7 of us on this train.
Oh wow!
But it's being launched as if there's a full train load. We got airtime at the top of the top hat. So much so that the next day we all had bruises on our thighs. I mean, wow. If it wasn't for that bars there, we would have been launched into outer space.
Yeah.
So that's an absolute one-off unique experience. But of course, they sort of create that now. You don't get some. You don't get airtime, but it does go over the top hat much faster now. Now it's got its new launch system.
Is that the case you're most excited about? Going on Top Thrill 2, or is there a particular new coaster that are really excited about?
I'm really looking forward to the Zambezi Zinger at World of Fun. I'm very familiar with the original Zambezi Zinger, which was an old Schwarzkopf. And when it comes to steel, Schwarzkopf was fabulous. The nearest you'd get to a wooden coaster made of steel. So I'm quite intrigued because they've done a spiral lift hill like the original. And looking at some of the changing angles of the track as it comes down, looks very, very intriguing. So I'm looking forward to that one. But you know, the Voyages on the trip, that's an absolute crazy wooden coaster at Holiday World. I would have said I was looking forward to the Rattler at Fiesta Texas, but that's Iron Rattler now, thanks to the unnamed people.
Are you not a big fan of RMCs?
I don't mind they're built from scratch rides.
Okay.
What I don't like is when they take a classic Woody and RMC it, because they take away the heart and soul of that ride. And I was really annoyed recently. I think it was a tweet or something from RMC. Which traditional wooden roller coaster do you want RMC'd next? And I did reply. I don't normally reply. And I did reply and said, none. Build your own, because I don't want we have to fight to keep the wooden coasters we've got. Let's not turn them into steel coasters, because RMC are still, you know, they're wooden support, but it is steel track most of the time. So I don't mind when they build their own, but stop destroying traditional ones. Now that GCI and Gravity Group have their own versions of track toppers and things, there's a way of refurbishing traditional wooden coasters to make them as good as new now without RMCing them. I also don't like, on RMCs, this obsession with hanging us upside down. It's a wooden coaster. We don't need that. That's what steel coasters do. Inversions and things are for steel coasters. Wooden coasters are for the thrill of the dips. So don't hang us upside down for too long. And the third thing, and I have told RMC president this, the restraints on RMCs. Why they have to shackle your legs and down at your ankles and shins? It hurts. And I don't want to ride a ride that hurts me. It's so over restrained, it takes away the fun. If the Phoenix at Knoebels, which is the world's biggest airtime machine, can still have a locking horizontal lap bar without a seatbelt, RMC do not need to shackle your ankles down. It just spoils the experience. Now, when I spoke to the president, he did say that he's a new president. So he did say he's aware of that, and they're going to, on the newer ones, put new restraints on, and they will retrofit them on old ones if a park wants and pays for it. Parks are not going to want, you know, parks aren't going to pay for that. So at least the new ones might be more rideable. But they have done some amazing things. I'm only mocking them in jest. I just wish they would leave the real traditional wooden roller coasters alone and concentrate on their own.
So when you hear a cry of RMC the Nash,
oh blimey, yeah. That makes me laugh when I read that, because I think it's not big enough. And why would you want to RMC the National?
It
does not need it.
I'm with you. I mean, I said this on the first series of the podcast. I was very, very vocal about that not being an option. But I know that obviously that it's probably said in jest, because, you know, the National's got its, would you say, a flaw? I don't know. On a bad day, it's a rough ride. I guess for you, that's part of the beauty of it.
But, you know, when I'm getting older, I'm looking a bit rougher. it happens. If you've got a car on your drive, 30 years old, it's going to be a lot rougher than the car you bought last week. The Grand National is that's also coming on for 100th anniversary, like the Big Dipper. Technology's moved on. We have to just accept it isn't going to be like a modern wooden roller coaster built today. We have to accept it for what it is and appreciate it for what it is. You know, it's the same as if you go into an old house, the ramshackled house, with the wooden beams on and things like that. It's not going to have smart lighting and things like a modern house will. Technology's changed and things change, but we still respect those old buildings and the old castles and all the things we've got. We don't say, let's knock them down and build a new castle because that looks a bit rough. No. So let's, you know, protect our heritage, not just destroy it because somebody wants an RMC.
If there was a choice for you between knocking it down or RMC, not necessarily the National, but any Woody, and the options were either going to get rid of it totally or we're going to RMC it, what would your preferred choice be?
Well, that's a difficult one. with the Grand National, what I would say is, if we're going to get rid of the Grand National as it is, we get GCI or Gravity Group to rebuild the Grand National new style. So it'll be
a traditional Woody.
Yeah, the new Grand National.
Yeah.
Mobius Loop, racing trains, etc. What you've got to remember, though, is for the Pleasure Beach, the upkeep of that ride is twice as expensive as any other coaster.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's two tracks they've got to maintain.
Yeah.
Twice as many trains, twice as many brake systems, lift hills and so forth. It's an expensive ride to maintain. So they can only do so much to it at any one time. Yeah. The fact it's still running and they haven't thrown a towel in is fantastic.
Have you had a most memorable club trip, would you say, that you thought that was the best one I've ever done?
That's a difficult one because they've all got their own unique... we always come back with stories to tell. One particular, a park in Iowa. We had an exclusive ride session and it was on a CCI Woody. And I said to the ride operator, is there any chance, as it's an exclusive ride session, we can just stay on? Now, what I meant was the train comes into the station and we don't get out. We just go again. He thought I meant turn all the brakes off. And as we were coming into the station, now this is very much Megaphobia style. So if you imagine coming to the brakes on Megaphobia and them not being on and you take that bend under the little service shed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You take that at full speed, so there's no banking, and you come into the station and you go straight through it and you don't catch the chain on the lift hill till you're halfway up.
Wow.
That's what we did. Now, he let us go around 20 times like that.
Wow.
Everybody on the left-hand side had bruises down the side, but nobody wanted to get off. It was such a unique experience. And when we did get off, the park manager came over. He said, I'm going to have to fire the man now. And the guy said, I don't care. I'm quit today anyway. I just did it for fun. So we had a collection for him. and then later in the day, the manager came over. He said, I think he's taken about 10 years off the track on the last bend. Because it's designed to roll in at 1 mile an hour, not full speed. But that was an amazing one.
Those are the kind of experiences you're only going to get really on a club trip like that, aren't you? You're never going to experience that as general public.
No, it was a quick one-off. And it was a genuine mistake. He really did misunderstand what I meant. He got no complaints, though, of course.
No.
Does that kind of sum up, I suppose, what you get on a club event, the atmosphere and the sort of camaraderie of it? If someone's never been on a club trip, you know, what can they expect? It could be a bit daunting for someone to rock up to.
Completely. I've got 20 people coming on this trip for the first time. And one of the ladies, she's a mature lady. She's going to be the oldest female on the trip. She's coming on her own. And she sent me some questions about fitting in with the crowd. And I said, do not worry. By the time we land in Pittsburgh, which is where we fly to, you will be part of our Coaster Crazy family. Because nobody in the club, the emphasis is have fun. And we have characters in the club. We have interesting people in the club. We have the anorak people. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, we also tick every box been invented and every box not been invented. If you like roller coasters and you want to come to the park with us and have fun, you fit in. And some of these first timers will no doubt form lifelong friendships with people on the club, because that's what's happened over the years. There are people now who go on holiday away from club trips together who did not know each other till an America trip. We are stuck on a coach or two coaches together for 2 weeks or more. If you're there on your own, you're going to talk to people. You're going to ride with people. You're going to get to know the people you're riding with, but it could be a different person each time. We're going to go out for dinner together. I organize lunches in all the parks. We're going to have lunch together. We're going to exclusive ride together. We might, if we get to a hotel early enough, we might end up throwing you in the pool together and things like that. All the fun things we do. It's just as long as you want to come and have fun, you fit in. I know the club isn't for everybody, and I try and make that clear to people, because I get the abuse of Andy Hyten runs around shouting coaster crazy and getting everybody to shout oggy oggy oggy. That is just to get the camaraderie going and the atmosphere going. It's not to make somebody feel embarrassed. And I always say, if you found the club is not for you, particularly those who are interested in the more technical side, that's fine, because there are other clubs for that. I'd rather have a smaller club of people who want to be coaster crazy than a big club of people who don't want to be in it. That way we don't have any issues with anybody. And you're not giving me money to come on something you're not going to enjoy. And everybody who does come, they know they're all there just to have a good time. Mm.
I think that's the thing with theme parks, isn't it, Andy, and roller coasters? It's meant to be fun. It's meant to you're having a day out with family, friends. And for me, you know, theme parks is a place where you spend time with loved ones, friends, people you care about, and you have a great time with them and have a laugh. And I think that's what it should be. It shouldn't be taken so seriously,
The moment you park your car or get whatever transport to the park, the moment you step through that gate, you should suspend all your stress of life. Depending what age you are, your schoolwork, your job, your mortgage, whatever, forget about it for the day. You have entered a world now where for the day you're going to do things you don't normally do, because you don't normally go around upside down doing 100 miles an hour or all the other things you're doing in a theme park. So just chill out and enjoy that day for what it is. If you have to queue, that's part of the theme park. It's part of the process of anticipating and building up the anticipation for the ride. And so on. Just go, don't get stressed by it. Get stressed by queue jumpers, particularly in Europe, but that's annoying. Because they need to get security in those queue lines. But when everybody's behaving, just enjoy it. And that way you can have a fun day. And some of our best days are at the smallest parks. We went to Funland in Hayling Island, and it's got one small coaster. We had probably as good a day there as we would have had at Alton Towers or Cedar Point. We ended up on the beach playing baseball, Woodies v Steelies. I'll let you decide who won that one, of course.
Yeah.
But it was just because if you go with the attitude, I'm going to have a fun day, you will have a fun day. If you go with the attitude, oh, I hate this park because of this reason or that reason, you're going to have a bad day. So don't go to that park. it's I'm all for live for now and enjoy the moment. You never know what's around the corner. You know, the world itself, if we're going to be serious for a minute, the world itself is a bit volatile at the moment. There's too many wars going on, too many disagreements, and protests all the time. Theme parks are a chance to get away from that and enjoy it. So just take that, grasp it, and have a good day. A coaster crazy day.
I love it.
What's in store for the club, you know, into the coming year and beyond that? What, have you got any big plans, any big trips?
I really want to take them all to Energylandia.
Oh, yeah.
An official trip.
Cool, yeah.
I know a lot of members have done it because it's very, you know, the America trips, I try and take people to places they would never get to. Everyone can get to Florida. Everyone can get to California. I take them to Stricker's Grove, the park that only opens 3 days a year. I'm very fortunate. I know the owner. I got them to open it just for us and things like that. So I try and get them places where they would never get in their life. And it's easy to get to Poland. There's so many cheap flights there now. But I'd like to do an official day there with some exclusive riding and stuff. So that's something I'm looking at as well. And some Scandinavian parks as well, because I've not taken the group there. They've got some wonderful parks there. And the Scandinavian owners, and they're lovely people.
It's exciting times. I bet you didn't think all back in 1988 that this is where it would have grown to.
And no, and if somebody said it to me, you'll still be doing this in 36 years. I said, of course I'm not. get a life. and now it is my life.
Amazing. How do we get to join then, Andy? How do we become a part of the Roller Coaster Club of Great Britain?
It's really simple. On Google, if you just type the initials, it comes up at the top. Which always makes me laugh because I keep getting this junk mail saying, we can get you top of Google. And I think, look, I already am. Stop sending me this rubbish. Or just type Roller Coaster Club of Great Britain. It is only £15 a year. And you'll get a membership card that will save you that on your first visit to any Merlin park. Or it will save you more than £15 on a Merlin season pass. Plus, we do deals with Scandinavian parks, the Irish parks in Ireland, Emerald Park, parks in America. So you save it back instantly. But that's not why you need to join. Why you join, and not the 12 issues of the magazine, I think. Why you join, of course, is to meet people on club events and have a great time. And if you don't want to do that, we're the wrong club for you. But if you just want to meet like-minded people and have a crazy time, then we are the ones.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much, Andy, for coming on podcast and obviously sharing your very extensive history in and around theme parks. And obviously
we could talk for hours.
You need to come back on and we'll do another episode. I think, you know, obviously you've been awarded that MBE for your services to tourism, and I think, you know, if there was such an MBE as services to roller coaster enthusiasm, you'd get one of them as well, because there's probably a lot of people and a lot of those YouTubers that you've talked about who are only doing that because of what you paved the way for.
I still pay for my own passes as well. I never ask them. If they say to me, as a thank you for bringing 400 people today, we're going to give you a pass, then I will accept it graciously. But if they didn't say that, I'm paying for every park in America. I am paying the same money to go on the America trip as everybody who's going on the America trip.
Yeah.
I still need a seat on the plane. I still need my seat on the coach. I still need a bed in the hotels. I've paid the same money. I never started this ever to make money. And that's always been the way I do it, because I've got a real job. I earn my keep with my real job. The payment for this is when I stand on a platform and I look at those people smiling and thinking, if I hadn't done this, they wouldn't be here. That is payment beyond any amount of financial payment would. And so which is why I get, when I see some of the abuse online, I think, if only you knew. I'm just doing this really for you, not for any other reason. I got an email after Blackpool from a mum. Her daughter has spectrum condition and doesn't talk to people, doesn't like crowds and so on, but she wanted to come on the trip. And I spoke to the mum at length beforehand, saying, you know, I can't do anything about the crowds. This event has over 400 attendees, but we'll do our best to look after and make her feel welcome. And mum came as well, and so she wrote to me afterwards and said her daughter has said to her it was the best weekend she's ever had in her life. Mm. Her mum said, I saw her riding with people she'd never met. She came and talked to me. I actually, we always have a disco as well at the end of the day. I didn't know it was the girl at the time, but I danced with her. And she said, I have tears in my eyes at how my daughter has changed from coming on your trip. And that to me, again, like I just said, is worth more than any amount of money I would ever take. Because that means that we've got somebody involved in our community who feels safe and comfortable enough. Nobody cares in the club. We just want you to have a good time. And as long as you are, that's all that matters. And it's nice. Mm. And those sort of things make 36 years worthwhile.
Podcast. Just go ride it.
So this is Just Gotta Ride It. It's the part of the podcast where we find out what roller coaster we all need to go and ride, in the opinion of our guest. Andy, I think I know what you're going to say. You might surprise me, but what is your Just Gotta Ride It? It's only one, and I'm sure you've been on many hundreds of roller coasters, but if you could pick one, what is it?
Let me think about it for a nanosecond. The Phoenix Knoebels.
What is it about this ride?
It is the absolute world's best wooden coaster. It gets voted that all the time as well. I have ridden that ride thousands of times. Last time I visited the park, I didn't get off for 50 rides. The ride has never had a bad day. That park knows how to look after their wooden coasters. They built it themselves, of course, so they know it in and out. And they make sure that when they turn it on in the morning, it runs as best as it can do. It's an absolute airtime machine from start to finish, and you cannot help but have fun on it. And if you get a chance to go on it, anyone who hasn't, go for seat 3. Everybody talks about the back seat, which is normally good, but on the Phoenix, seat 3 from the front. There you will float around the track. it is such a great, and I've ridden it so many times that when they took the lap bar off from seat 3, they gave it to me. So on my wall in my office, I have the lap bar from seat 3. There's a new one on there now, so don't worry, they have replaced it. You could not ride that ride without lap bars. But it is just wonderful, and the whole park is wonderful. It is not a corporate park. It's owned by the Knoebels family. The whole park is not how much can we rip you off, it's how much can we make sure you have a fun day. So rides are a dollar to ride. On-ride photos are $3 or $4, not $30. Drinks are $2 a cup, not $8 a cup, and so on. The park doesn't need to make millions, because that's not the lifestyle they want, the owners. They just want to make sure you have fun. There's no entry fee, there's no parking fee, and you can have a fantastic... I would go on holiday there and spend 2 weeks in that park.
Two weeks on the Phoenix.
Well, I'd nip off and do the Twister as well, because that's pretty good as well.
Yeah, heard lots of good things about that park.
They literally rebuilt the Phoenix from the ground. Hence why it's called the Phoenix.
My trip coming up, I'm going to San Antonio, which is where Fiesta Texas is. The Phoenix was built there originally in a park called Playland Park, and it was the Rocket. And when the park closed down, Dick Knoebel went down there and said, "We'll buy that." And they took it down piece by piece, bought it up themselves in their own lorries, and they put it back together again. They saved a classic wooden coaster that rides as good now as at day one.
RMCing the Phoenix then.
I might even go to the site of where it originally was, just to pay my respects.
Amazing. I thought you'd say that. I think your love for the Phoenix is well known in our community. Once again, Andy, thank you so much for coming on podcast. We'd love to get you back on in the future. So keep in touch with us, and good luck on your America trip. Hope it all goes really well.
Thank you very much.
Podcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.